Good morning. Welcome back to the Edge and Flow podcast. This is TJ Schwartz. I'm here with my co-host Lucas Burnley. We talk about knives manufacturing, and that's actually pretty heavily what we're talking about today, manufacturing a little bit.
Yeah, that's all we're talking about.
Just about. So, yeah, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. This has been a week, man. We got sick kids and lots of like little details occupying time.
This
Holidays.
time of year is it's like I was talking to my wife. I look forward to Christmas so much. It was one of my favorite holidays, just like everybody else. I'm pretty simple in that way. But then there's this little voice in my head that's like, I can't wait for January, you know?
I
And
know.
it's like I kind of feel bad about that, but at the same time, it's like, man, with a business and kids and the holidays, it's like it starts to,
Well, it's a culmination too,
yeah.
because you basically do it's a Halloween, Thanksgiving, and then Christmas.
Yeah.
Your kids aren't in school yet, but then, like, when the kids are in school, those are breaks. And when you're self-employed, sometimes, like, it still catches me off guard. Like, oh, wait, the kids are home for a week? I didn't factor that into my production schedule. Trying to be better about it, but it's hard.
But it's
January,
a
bring it.
yeah, right. And some sunlight.
I'll
I
take
lamented last week on the pod that we weren't seeing the sun, and we still are not. So I
it.
feel like some kind of hibernating reptile or something. I don't know,
Yeah, dude,
but
it's all good. But you have had mad progress over the last week. This is like a scenario of slow burn and then like rocket ship.
So with the X9 wanting to grind with it, we were at full stop until I had a fixture. And on the last pod, I was waiting and I thought it would be any day. Well, I think it was Tuesday morning of this week at maybe 7 a.m. I get an email, hey, your fixtures are done. I immediately get in the Jeep. The roads are slicker than just solid black ice everywhere. And I'm like, I don't care. I'm getting in the Jeep. I'm going to make my way over to town because it's Nampa, which is near Boise, about, I don't know, 35 minutes away. So I just go like cruise over there nice and slow. I get those fixtures, come back, put one on the mill. And I mean, we had a ground part within a few hours. Because
Dude, that's amazing.
the nice thing about it is we had enough time to do everything else so that everything would be staged for the moment that we had the last piece. And so we had heat treated knives, we had everything programmed, we had all the coolant filled up, everything hooked up, everything pretty much dialed in on the machine. So I just had to throw the Pearson base on there, you know, tram it in, make sure it's all square, throw the fixture on, probe it, put the part on, hit cycle start. And the very first bevel went pretty like what I did was you have to come down in multiple passes, generally speaking. I mean, you can't just go all the way to full depth in one shot, obviously. And so I'm doing multiple passes, but all I did was program one pass. And then I would just come to where I know I'm just barely going to touch the part because I want to hear what it sounds like and get a feel for it. So it barely kind of zings like the very edge. And then I, you know, say, okay, let's take a couple thou, see how that does it. And then I'm just manually punching in like Z offsets on the machine just to push it down into the knife, one pass at a time. Because it's almost impossible to program those depths unless you can hear it and see it and see what if it's overheating or if it's, you know what I mean? So
And this
I
is something that you've seen in process enough. So you kind
yeah.
of understand. It's so funny, man. Like the sound, like when I've taught people to hand grind, I teach people sound.
Yeah.
It's crazy that it's a similar
It is.
process.
It's very sound. Sound is huge. Yeah, I think grinding and sound are kind of hand in hand almost in
Yeah, makes
any
sense.
type of grinding. But yeah, so I stepped it down to like 10 thou depth for a shot and it did fine. And I was like, okay, I kind of wanted basically to my knowledge, like the upper limit of speed is just heat. Cause you can get a good finish without a lot of trouble. As long as the blade shape is pretty approachable, which the sport Overland Sport really is. But I wanted to see where it would get hot. Like where would the part burn? Because that's going to be like the upper limit. And so I pushed it to 20 thou depth per cut and that started to burn. So it ground perfect. Like if you look at the actual grind, it looks perfect, but you could see along the edge, like this ghosting of a brown color, which means it's ruined. I mean, the knife's scrap if you see brown because of, temper.
Sure. That was pretty light looking at it. Like you had like a little more than temper, maybe.
What's that?
Like you had like a it's like a little more than straw.
Yeah, like a
Yeah.
little chocolatey maybe.
Yeah. So
Yes.
yeah, getting in there.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean pretty brown, like almost coffee brown in some spots. And so I was fine with that. I knew I was going to scrap the first one because you kind of immediately need to figure out what your limitations are so that when you program it, you can stay away from that. And so I got the first one off. I knew it was burned, but we stonewashed it without doing any hand finishing. And dude, it was right on the verge of a perfect stonewash with no handwork. I mean, it was, I mean, borderline
Well, you
shippable.
showed me the picture and I couldn't like discern any, like I saw two little verticals in the background. That's
Yep.
so refined.
Really, really impressed with it. Honestly, it worked amazing. Like I said, I burned the first one, so I knew it was scrap anyway. But then I started putting knives on it to see where I could. I basically now I want to program it, so I'm going to stay away from that depth of cut for now. I'm going to try to get the parameters right so that it's repeatable. Because with Christmas coming right up and stuff, we want ground knives like yesterday. So
Yeah.
I want it. Like I've said before on the pod a little bit, is like I always try to go for stable and reliable, and then worry about efficiency later. And so I'm like, how I want to go slow. I want to stay far away from burning it. I want to just make it work. And so I ended up scrapping two more due to burning it, but that was a different scenario. And what it is I've learned pretty clearly just in grinding like five knives that the coolant management and coolant distribution is everything.
Yeah, makes
So pretty
sense.
much all of the, I don't want to say headache, but like R&D, it comes down to what is the coolant doing? Because I noticed, if you remember, I don't have through spindle coolant running right now. So that automatically means this is all slower than what it could be.
Right.
But the through spindle coolant pump has an auxiliary tank that's actually bigger than the main tank. It's huge. And because that I'm not using that tank was full. And so my main tank for the flood coolant was actually a little low because
Yep.
they feed back and forth in like a cycle.
Yep.
But my main flood pump in the main tank was actually starved just a little bit. And I didn't even know that because, I mean, it's the first time I've run the machine. So we were at like maybe 40, 50% of overall
Oh, yeah.
CFM, but it was like a good amount. I just didn't, wasn't sure. And I burned two of them and I was like, man, this is weird. And then I realized that the coolant would stutter.
Yeah.
Or if you just stare at it for quite a while, you could see that it was starving enough that you'd kind of point the jets exactly where you want it. And then there'd be like a 10 seconds where it would kind of droop. And then it
Yep.
would, and then you could hear the grind. It would start to get a
Yep.
little bit more ringy. And then so I went and I have, even with the overcurrent, the way the through spindle pump works, I can turn it on for a few minutes before it pops the breaker. So I turned on the
Okay.
through spindle to start pumping all that through spindle coolant into the main tank and then shut it off before it hits a sensor that re feeds it.
Right.
And so I pumped all that coolant back in to totally max my main tank. And it was like, I didn't even realize it was like double the coolant instantly. And this knife that I just showed you was the very first one that had full coolant, not including the through spindle.
So for people that are listening that don't have like a machine background, like if you think of a frisbee spinning close to a tabletop, this is visual. And if you were to like take a squirt gun and spray the outside of the frisbee, okay, that's what we're talking about with coolant. So
Yeah.
you're fighting centrifugal force to try to get coolant in between the bottom of that frisbee and the steel. Okay.
Yeah.
If you have through spindle coolant, it's coming down through the center and the centrifugal force is actually pulling it out.
Yeah.
So you're dealing with a coolant problem, but you're also dealing with a delivery inefficiency.
Yeah. Yeah.
So once you get the through coolant, it's like even with that pressure loss, I bet it would be less of an issue because it's like pulling it from a different location and cooling it in a different way.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and I'd heard, from all the people that are doing this, like, yeah, through spindle is helps so much. And I mean, within three knives, I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely. I mean, you don't need it because obviously I just ground one without it. But I mean, I could tell how slow that how different I was going to have to program this without the three
Yeah.
spindle immediately. Because if you push it at all, it's going to burn.
It just starts to
Because
burn.
I mean, it's 64 Rockwell Magnica and it's a, you know, cubic boron. It's a pretty fine grit. And it's like if you're just pushing on it and it's not, and it's dry even momentarily. There was one that before I realized the pump was starving, it was like I would adjust the jets and I'd watch it and it was like, oh, I adjusted it wrong. Cause it would like, it would, the pressure would change enough where it was like, now it's missing. And like, don't do this at home, kids. But I like open the door and like, yeah, the coolant lines are on the very front. And so I was just kind of moving it a little bit and it lock lines. If you ever mess with them, you can't really micro adjust them. If you grab them and start to pull them, they just go like crack and they just move like way off.
It's
And
so annoying.
so it was like mid grind. And again, don't do this at home. And the wheel's only doing 3 inches a minute. So unless you stare at it, it doesn't look like it's moving. And so I just reach in there to kind of twist the line just a little bit and I twist it and it pops and it goes like at a 45 degree angle and completely misses the part. And I kid, in 1 second, it was like you could just hear it burning. Yeah, exactly. And I've got one knife right here that you can see the brown.
Oh, that's where
It
it
was exactly the spot. And I quickly like got it readjusted, but it just goes to show you that you have to have 100% reliable coolant delivery. You cannot. It's not like when we mill parts, if we're milling the perimeters and stuff, it's like, yeah, every once in a while that pump will starve for a second and then it kind of rebuilds pressure. And it's like, it's not ideal, but you're not going to see it on the part really. But on this, yeah, you cannot, it has to be absolutely perfect delivery of coolant every time.
I don't have a lot of experience with CBN wheels. Like, from what I understand, like they're pretty durable, right? So,
Yeah.
like something like that where you get a hot spot doesn't damage the wheel. I'm sure, I mean, obviously, like there's a spectrum, but
Right. In my experience, kind of working with other people that have done this, burning is very common. Like
okay.
if you're setting up a new knife and especially a new steel, there's almost a guarantee you're going to start burning parts here left and right. So I've seen a lot of burnt parts using this process while the coolant's getting tuned. And I've never heard of worry about
It's not like
that.
it's like breaking down the like adhesive or whatever, the binding agent in the wheel. What and then as far as like friability, these things don't change dimension very quickly, right?
So I've ground five knives and it wasn't quite enough data because you're always going to have like a little bit of thermal change, a little bit of like, so I didn't really notice a perceivable tolerance difference, but I'm sure there is some. But it's on a small knife like the Overland Sport. I'm inclined to think it's like maybe in this low tenths range of wear per part. So it's like, yes, you can't ignore it. You can't like just run all day without following that.
So, I mean, you are
But
changing wheels. Like, how many blades do you think you will get out of a wheel?
very speculative right now. I would all, so there the one I have is 3/8 deep. So that's how much. And obviously you can't go to zero. Maybe there's like 200 thou of usable, 250 thou.
Sure, leaving an
Uh,
eighth or
yeah,
something like
yeah,
that.
yeah. If you're using like a couple of tenths per, I mean, you're looking at 600 knives. I
Yeah,
mean,
that's
that's a
amazing.
total
And so
rough
as
estimate.
you the way that you're dimensioning these is you're essentially checking for tool wear of the grinding wheel and then adjusting that in an offset.
Just Z, yeah.
Just Z, yeah.
Just deeper, yeah.
Okay.
So,
And it's like basically a direct translation. Like if you
yeah.
lose a thou, you add a thou.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's
And
cool.
the beauty of it is you can take the part off and it's just one bolt. Because the nice thing is the wheel counter rotates and drives the knife against what basically a stop pin in the fixture. And then it's located by the lanyard hole. And then the wheel always is like, it's all downforce. It's not like an end mill where it wants to lift. And so all you need is like a bolt just to like kind of stop vibration and stuff. So if you want to take the part off and you got a drill, it's just, I mean, you can load parts on these just stupid fast. And so if you take it off and you measure the edge, You can put it back on and then just, bump your Z and run your just the finish pass
Yep.
one more time, because I've got a program that has like all the step downs, and then I post it out just the finish pass as its own program. So if you're like, oh, it's, need another five tenths off that, like 5 tenths, boom, right on the money. And it's like it's 1 to 1, like you said, it's a
Gotta love
mill, so
that.
I mean it's designed to hit tenths,
Yeah.
and it does, because like this last one, I mean, yeah, I was playing with that a little bit, and I threw a couple extra finish passes at it to just get that edge thickness exact. And I mean, yeah, you have pretty complete control, it feels like, but obviously with not a lot of data points, but I'm over the moon.
Dude,
I mean, the machine is
congratulations,
perfect
man.
for it.
I mean, this has been like a huge amount of work to get that up and running. It's
Yeah,
got to feel so good.
it's the reason, honestly, why we're in this shop.
Yeah.
Is like we have to get to this grinding, and we have to get a machine, and we have to get space. So it's like a domino effect
Yeah.
of to get to here. So it feels really, really good. Good way to close out the year.
Hell yeah, man. That's great. So, and this is right now is all grinding switching over to this process. Like it's
Yeah.
dialed enough that you're like, okay, that's it.
So the sport is we will never mill another bevel on the sport. Like, I think we have 10 on the shelf that are unfinished that were milled because we still were paralleling it. That's it. Those are the last 10. And we're running sports on Tuesday, as far as the tangs go,
Yeah.
and we will not be putting bevels on them. We're going full send. And so my motivation this week was I didn't need parts like to ship. I needed to know that on Tuesday with these blanks that are going to be coming in, I need to for sure know that we're going to be okay if we don't put bevels on them.
Yep.
Because if we don't, and then we can't grind them, like
Yeah.
there's that moment where you're like, I need a data point to give me the confidence to go ahead and heat treat these without a bevel.
Yep.
Because hard milling on that Magna Cut, it's not impossible, but it's a
It would
bad
have been
day.
a major setback, yeah.
Yeah.
It's
So
interesting. That's one area where you look at like redundancy or diversification and like an argument where it's like it almost makes sense to have blanks of a different steel in stock in case something goes down. You don't need that, but like that's how my brain works, where I'm
yeah.
like, because I'm so used to like making things work, but then those things like barely working at the time that I want like some level of redundancy. Like when we
Yeah.
first did the Quicken, I think I've talked about this, but like when I first brought the Quicken folder into CNC, we did it in a way that if I needed to, I could still hand make parts. I was like, there can't be any features that I can't do by myself. And then it's like, obviously now I couldn't recreate those parts fully by hand efficiently because I have like geometry and like the way that I cut certain things and lines and like, but it's still like a tendency.
Yeah. No,
It's just.
that's fair, which yeah, it's like I said, I was nervous, not that it wouldn't work, but I was nervous that the learning curve was gonna
Yeah.
give me, a lot of problems, and that it was gonna be, February by the time I was fully
Yeah.
confident, which it'd be fine, but it's like to parallel process when you
Yeah.
have this really nice setup and it's like we're still doing it the old way that we're not liking,
Yep.
is not a good feeling. And so yeah, I'm so happy, dude. It's I mean it yeah, everything came
Nice.
together. So
Love it.
now the other knives, because the Overland Sport is our number one seller and it has to lead the way. If we're going to make something more efficient, it's got to start there. And then it's like the full size Overland and stuff like that. So
Right.
if this works, it shouldn't be a big step to go get those online, but that's the next project.
Dude, super exciting. Congratulations, man. Well
Thank you.
done.
Thank you.
Since we were talking about steel, man, let's dig into that. There's a market upset.
Yeah. So I'm like, I don't know, looking at a Facebook group at, I don't know, I'm like laying in bed about to go to sleep, and I just see a post that's like somebody had posted in some Facebook group that Crucible, this is last or earlier this week, that Crucible it has declared in the state of New York a 90-day warning that they may be doing a mass layoff slash shutdown of their foundry. Crucible being the C in CPM.
Yeah. So if you think of CPM S30V, CPM 154,
Yeah. If
like
you
this
have a
is,
steel you like,
yeah,
85%
modern
chance that's
steel.
what it is
Yeah.
it's from this foundry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like other than like M390,
Yeah.
basically everything that's a decent, mid to high end knife is
Yeah.
CPM. And so the thing, just if you haven't been like familiar, CPM Crucible is the foundry
Yeah.
and they make the ingots, they do all the pouring, the smelting. You see all the, videos of a steel mill. Well, Niagara is the, I guess you would call them the distributor, and like all CPM steel for knives flows through Niagara. So it's Niagara ordering these grades of powdered metal from Crucible, and then they're from there distributing it. So like when I order all my steel, I order from Niagara, but they are on the back end ordering from Crucible. So it's kind of like a, a power couple that's been doing
Yeah.
that for how, who knows how long, as long as I've been in the industry.
Yeah.
Well, sounds like Niagara is in pretty good shape. It's Crucible that's having the issue. And that you have to look at, also at Crucible, in that a lot of people are thinking that this has, they're looking at implications based on the knife industry. But I think what
Right.
one thing people have to realize is Crucible is not a knife steel company. They are a steel company. And so they make tons of different tool steels, a lot of which are for like automotive industry and things like that. And so you have to look at, you can't, I think a lot of people look at trends in the knife industry and how that might have affected Crucible. That's not
Yeah,
nothing.
backwards. That's
But yeah,
backwards.
there's the
Yeah.
forces that are affecting them are definitely much
Yeah.
bigger than the knife industry.
Yeah. It's like a tool. That's like a tool, a small tool steel division, or like very specified products for cutlery steel.
Yeah.
That, yeah. So you're saying, like, in general, there's some people that feel like, oh, the knife market is down, so this is affecting Crucible. Like,
Yeah, probably not. I can't say that for a fact, but in all
sure.
honesty, if you're going to make an injection mold to make a fender for a
Yeah.
Honda, for a, Ford,
Yeah.
whatever,
Yeah.
the injection mold made out of tool steel
Yeah.
for that is going to be more pounds of steel
Yeah.
than we are going to use in this shop in like
Yeah.
5 years. You
Yeah.
know what I mean? So
Yeah, it's a
just for
different
one
game.
mold, you know what I mean? So it's like that, the injection molding, tool and die, stamping. So, I mean, yeah, you're going to stamp a tailgate of an F-150, you're going to need like
Yeah.
3,000 pounds of steel,
Yeah.
of high
It would be
grade.
like the McRib affecting McDonald's. Like, McRib is delicious.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not going to affect the bottom line.
Right. Yeah.
People
And
are going,
so,
McRib's not delicious.
yeah, so that kind of brings in the whole conversation of like the auto industry is on the
Yep.
rocks these days. And that I have a, I'm not an expert on the whole steel auto industry
Yeah.
relationship, but when the auto industry stumbles, a lot of things stumble. I mean, we all remember 2008, you know what I
Yeah.
mean? It's so that's, I suspect, a little part of this, but
It's probably a yes and too. It's like one of those things where the knife industry is down. Like, we talk about this, right? Like, we know that there's air, like, that there are areas of the industry where, like, it's easy to say, like, oh, overall sales are down. Okay. There's microcosms that that's not true, but like overall sales, like post pandemic, like sales are down in many sectors. So, like, if you tie that into auto sales also being down, and then it's like from there, what other tooling is affected? Like, what other steel industries are affected? And then you start to see, like, oh, it's probably a ripple that is pretty broad, you know?
And so this brings a question. There's a lot of, speculation, all kinds of rumors. Like, is Magnacut going away? Is it disappearing? No one can say exactly what's going to happen, obviously. But
Right.
the bottom line is, so I called and spoke to a good friend over there, Tim Reeve, who I keep mentioning his name on the pod, and we need to probably
Friend of the
bring him on
pod.
here. Yeah,
Yeah.
big friend of the pod and a personal friend of mine. But yeah, I they, their company has this relationship with Niagara and Crucible that is pretty pinnacle, because I mean they were involved in creating S35
Yeah. So if
originally.
you guys don't know this, Chris Reeve, Tim's dad, was involved in the creation of what, S30 and then S35VN.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
And so
then
this the way this works is, like, as a manufacturer and, like, a knife maker going to a company and being like, "Hey, I want a steel that does this. How do we improve, whatever it was at that time, like toughness, edge holding, and corrosion resistance, right? Like Holy Trinity kind of stuff." Okay.
Well, and to my knowledge, I don't know if it was S30 or S35. One of those two, I believe, was like the very first steel, tool steel, to diverge into being an actual knife steel. Because
I think it
every
was
steel
S30.
was it S30? Yeah, that
I'm
sounds
pretty
right.
sure. Yeah.
So if you look at Crucible, and the way their history works is like prior to S30, which is like in the late 90s, right?
Yeah.
You had all these steels that weren't developed with knives and cutlery being a total peripheral. They didn't, you
They
don't,
just
they didn't,
happen to work well for it.
yeah, 1095,
D2,
A2,
A2,
D2,
yeah.
01.
O1, right.
Yeah,
Like all
there
the
was,
names, yeah.
they didn't, they were not thinking about knives when they made that
Yeah.
steel. And
Yeah, they were
so,
thinking about a paper shear
yeah.
or something like that. So it's like
Yeah.
there's things that are tangential that you're like, oh, okay, if we do this, that's why it like this is kind of a tangent, but that's why early on with custom knife makers, there was so much testing because they were adapting steels and then trying to figure out, okay, we know the steel can do this thing. How do we make it work for knives better? Like, oh, they run it. Like, if it's in a paper mill, it runs at this Rockwell. That Rockwell makes it too brittle to be a knife. Like, we're going to test heat treat processes until we come up with something good.
Yeah, exactly.
Back on track.
Yeah, and then so that just kind of gives you some of the backstory of like the heritage of CPM is that
Yeah.
that is the inaugural like knife steel industry in the late
Yeah.
90s of no, we're making steel for knives. They're not making injection molds out of MagnaCut.
Yeah.
They're making it, only really making knives as
Yeah.
far as
And
I
that
know.
is, and that's Laron Thomas,
Yeah.
okay, basically coming up with an alloy of steel based on his interaction and like lineage in the knife industry and being like, I know what I want a steel to do
And he's a metallurgist in the auto industry
in
as
the
a day
auto
job.
industry.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. And so yeah, so we have these this string of, six or eight steels from CPM that were developed for knives. And so people are like, "Oh, is that going to disappear? Is that going to dry up?" Well, I talked to Tim because to circle back, that's what they run. They run CPM Steel.
Yeah.
They have a pretty good sized company and they make steel with, or they make knives out of CPM. So
Yeah.
obviously their stand to be affected by this and I wanted to kind of touch base and it sounds like Crucible's been for sale for 2 years.
Right.
And so I think this is actually not news to Niagara. It's not news to people that order large volumes. Like if you're
Right.
Benchmade, you probably knew this
You probably
already.
knew it.
And so it was news to me, but I don't have like the direct inroads to those. But sounds like Niagara has been working with other foundries to bring these grades back online in the event of this situation for what sounds like maybe a year at least.
Okay.
And so they've been working to basically avert a crisis here for quite some time. And so some of this is we have to kind of place confidence in them and these other
Right.
foundries, one of which being Carpenter,
Right.
which we all, if you've been around a little while in the industry, you'd know about Carpenter.
CTS XHP was like real popular for a while.
Yeah, so they're legit. Sounds like they could pull it off. And so the what's the guy's name? I'm forgetting Niagara. Bob Shibala. He posted on Blade Forums a pretty good post about how they've already been placing POs. This is public info. He's saying we've been placing POs for these grades of steel from these other companies for a while now. So they seem to believe Niagara themselves that this is going to be averted, that this crisis is going to be averted, and that Crucible isn't guaranteed to go out of business at this juncture because in New York there's a labor law that says if you were planning some larger scale change in labor, you have to give some amount of warning. And so let's say you're in their position, you're on the knife's edge, there's a 50-50 chance you're trying to get some outside funding or whatever. You have to cover yourself from litigation by warning the potential
Oh
of a
yeah,
layoff.
right.
And so this wasn't an announcement that, hey, we're going bankrupt. Sorry,
Right.
see ya. It
But
was, it was a legal requirement that they announced to their employees a possible layoff because of the tumultuous financial picture. And so they could still pull out of it in theory,
And it's hard because
or get
there's some stuff
bought.
that I always wonder with that, if it's like you're like it's like self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like you make the announcement, which you have to make, and then you have X amount of your
Employees
labor
leave.
force that are like, oh, I'm out. And then that's a problem. But this isn't related. They're not a subsidiary company, right? Like, is Crucible its own parent company?
I believe
Yeah, it's
so.
not related to like US Steel or something like that, where there's like larger wheels in motion.
I actually don't know.
That's a fun
They
one
did go
to look
bankrupt
out.
in 2009,
Okay.
and they got, I don't know the history, I don't want to speak out of turn, but somehow they got bailed out in 09 from a
Yeah.
bankruptcy. I don't know if that was a purchase
Yeah.
or if, and maybe that purchaser is now trying to liquidate them. I honestly
Yeah.
don't
Don't.
know.
Yeah. That's all speculation. Like, just that's purely my curiosity.
But they did go bankrupt in 09 and
Yeah.
the steel still existed.
It still existed. You know what's interesting to me, actually, like, takeaway from this conversation is that they posted in Blade forums about it. Like, of all places, like, I didn't see anything, and maybe that's just maybe I'm not seeing it in other channels. But one, it shows the value of forums still, or the perceived value of forums. Because, like, when you think about it, it's like, where would you post about? You probably post social media. Forum is social media, but it's encapsulated, right?
Yeah, it's
It's
stickier.
closed loop, right? But that is, yeah, that's pretty interesting. So, I mean, that's pretty major. I wonder if they've had like a rush on steel. I mean, I would imagine.
And I had just placed like a, I'd already before hearing any of this wanted to start to increase our steel supplies,
Yeah.
as far as our supply chain goes. And I'd already ordered quite a bit of steel. And so I'm tempted, like on Monday, I might be a little slow off the gun, but I'm tempted to re-up it even more just in as an
Yeah.
insulation value. I don't know,
Yeah.
but
Are you very sensitive? This is kind of a tangent, but like, are you very sensitive to market fluctuations? Like that. Like, when you see that, is your tendency to go, oh man, I gotta protect. I'm gonna order a bunch more. Or are you kind of like agnostic about it, and like, the market's gonna move up or down? And I'm saying the market, in this case, it's steel, but this could be financial market, investing, anything else, gas prices, like.
I try to take the road of like, if you can't control it, don't worry about it,
Yeah. Yeah.
because
That's where
here's
I'm
the,
at.
we've built our whole brand on Magnecut, and I would
Yeah.
be very sad if it became either unavailable or just difficult to get.
Yeah.
But one thing I know is that if we can get it, nobody could get it in theory,
Sure.
right?
Right. Maybe the big companies. I mean, we're like, you look at it and you're like, order priority. You
Well,
know?
I guess I just mean if the steel grade went through like a 6 month period where it was
Totally.
defunct, it's
Yeah.
like our competitive advantage in theory doesn't really go away
Yeah.
because everybody has to
Yeah.
migrate away
I
from
mean, that's like
steel.
CTS XHP. That steel basically went away. A lot of people were using it. I don't know if anybody was using it as like their primary line, right? I've never, at this point, I haven't done enough production to have like a very set steel, right? And I don't buy, because I mean, for the longest time, it was like custom folders, and my output is fairly low. It's like, and I'm using CPM 154, or I'm using Damascus. So I've never had to like really worry about that. If I can't get this steel, my product line suffers. Right.
No, it's definitely on my mind. When I first saw that, it kind of got spooked for a second, but I just reminded myself that that's part of why we brought the LT5 online with A2.
Yeah.
Is there's a feeling in my gut that A2 is an ace in the sleeve because it can be made by anyone. CPM can make A2.
Yeah.
Crucible can make A2. It's no
Yeah.
pat there's no
Yeah.
patent, there's
Yeah.
no it's not a powdered metal, so like there's probably, who knows, untold number of routes to go to try to source
Yeah.
A2. And so that is a little bit of a reinforcement, because we want to expand that line moving forward. And so it's another check on that side of the column of like, yeah, definitely get the Lost Trail series rolling with A2 because
Yeah.
it's just much more bulletproof than like this high-end premium niche specifics.
It's just some additional security. I think that is so key if you have a system that can be broken down by one problem, like it's not robust,
Yeah. No, I
right?
agree. And the
And
other
that's
thing
the beauty
is,
of being small, is you have flexibility to be, it's like all of a sudden you can't get hardware. You can source a different hardware, modify part, like you can bootstrap it into like, you know, a success. Not ideal, but you can do it.
Yeah, and that's where I did kind of run through the, you know, fire drill of like, okay, if they told me I can't order MagnaCut for an you know, unknown amount of time, for like the overlands and stuff, that's where Bowler comes in. Because if you're gonna stick with the high end approach, Bowler's basically next at bat, right? It's and the only honestly, Bowler does amazing work. The only reason they don't dominate more of the market, I think, is I mean, they're a European company, steel's
Well, they don't
expensive to
dominate the
ship.
US market,
Exactly.
right? So, like a
Yeah.
lot of German makers use Bowler Uddeholm, right?
Yeah, Bowler Uddeholm, yep. But steel's expensive to ship. It's heavy. You got to go across the Atlantic Ocean and tariffs.
And tariffs.
So that's where they get kind of cornered out of US manufacturing. And that's where it's interesting. You'll see like tons of M390, M390 being a Bowler steel. You'll see tons of M390 knives, but they're almost all made in like Italy. But you don't see, and they're sold in America, but you just don't see the steel as a raw material coming into America very much. And so there's some geopolitics involved in that,
That's
but
it, dude. I'm out. I'm going 1095. I'm done.
right. I'm doing just G10 push daggers now.
That's all, dude.
Yeah.
Done. I'm out.
Yeah. Full tactical.
Too many. This technology is too much for me.
Yeah.
You know what? You know what? Comes to mind. This is like more maybe on like a little bit of like a philosophical level to you is, man, the processes that you, I'm not going to say the process is the product because that's not actually what I'm trying to say, but like you can't always see the work that you're doing when you're doing it. You can't see how that's going to affect things down line. But like if you are making the best decision to like for your company, for your brand, for, you know, at the time, a lot of times it works out in like interesting ways towards the end. And like some of this stuff is network, like just being like you talking about who you talk to in this context about this problem specifically, you know, that's network, right? And that's having a good relationship. And I had something happen yesterday that was like very similar, kind of a referral popped, like a referral slash like opinion of me popped up in a meeting, and it was really positive, and it wasn't something that I knew, it wasn't something that was related, it was but I look and I'm like, oh, that's 100% based on my relationship with like this other party. So I think a lot of it, man, it's like who, yeah, you build the systems, you build the relationships, you build the network, and like that, I'm thinking about this in like robustness,
People before
right?
product.
People before product, right? Because that even the ability of the steel companies to like go to another steel company, right? So for like Crucible to be able to go to Carpenter, right? Like, yeah, there's a financial like component to that. But if like the owner of one had burned the owner of another, like it's probably not gonna happen. You have to be of a like level of, I don't know, like industry standing and reputation to be able to pull that off.
Yeah, for sure.
So I don't know. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I have optimism. There's no other real path other than optimism on this because, like I said, I'm not gonna get on a flight to Syracuse and go fix anything, you know what I mean? So it's I'm just gonna be optimistic until it's things go south, and if they do, we pivot. And there's other ways to make knives.
You know, another one that is kind of related to this. So I'd ask you if you have like strong responses to market like movement. One thing is like dollar cost averaging materials. I've always felt is like a very strong for making investment strategy, right? Like if you think about it, if you're like materials that you like and you know you use, if you think, for instance, something like carbo quartz. if the time that carbo quartz had been around, you're like, I use this much, I'm gonna buy a little bit extra over this. Oh, the price has gone up, I'm gonna keep buying it. And you buy it over a timeline, like you would have made a lot of money at this point because the material dried up and now you have a back stock, right? And what we see in general is like, I don't know any materials that have gotten less expensive. Like in the time that I've been making knives, none of my steel, titanium, or any other related material has gotten cheaper.
Right, for
By
sure.
that logic, if you're buying it continually, obviously you're not like, Scrooge McDuck, like swimming through a, pool of steel. But I just feel like at your level, where you're using volume steel, there's probably a pretty strong argument to just be like, oh yeah, I'm ordering X amount more than I need. I don't know. Somebody could break that down and probably disagree with me, but.
No, I agree 100%. And I'd kind of already turned over to that kind of approach, like I said, about a month ago, and I placed some larger orders for MagnaCut. And so we are in a position where we do have like a little slug of it now. But I kind of thought the first half of next year I'd start to do what you were just saying, which is you don't need to like totally wreck your cash flow picture by just buying it all at once. But like you just said, okay, I need two sheets, I'm gonna order three.
Even
And
if at
then
the end of the year, you don't need to do an order. Right? Like they're just from a strategic standpoint, and this maybe like with lean manufacturing and these different concepts, like maybe that completely goes against lean, right? Like you order what you need, you build what you need, you ship those, you like start over. But I love that idea of it's almost like a little bit of found money. What I would be curious is actually to know, like, over a 5-year period, what is that percentage? Right? Because if it doesn't, if it's one of those things where it's like, if you could have right now, interest rates are really high. Okay. So say like you can throw that into a high yield savings account and get 5% on that same money and steel prices only go up 2%. Maybe it's like not worth it. Right. Just setting aside money for materials is worth it.
Yeah, but you can't make knives out of a stock portfolio. So
And
that's there's
that's
a
not,
value in
yeah,
that.
that's the thing is that's not accounting. Like if you've been doing this, if there's a market upset, you're like, oh, well, we do have a 6-month supply of steel. That's not a solution, but what it is an on-ramp, right? To like, okay, we now have this method of continuing operations for 6 months while we figure out what the next plan is.
No, that'd be an ideal scenario. I'd like to work my way into that. And so the timing of this is good, but it is a little early on. If this had happened in 1 year, I think we'd have been in a better position. But like I said, it's kind of is what it is.
Do
So
you at this point, do you store or warehouse, I guess, any materials? Like, I mean, you do like small like things that you're not having, water jet cut or something like that. You probably have sheets of in the shop, right?
No, we never have sheets in the
You never have
shop
sheets.
because sheets always come and go straight to water jet. So our inventory ends up being already water jet.
So if you were doing that, what you were essentially saying is you wouldn't have sheet steel, you would have additional blanks. Okay, got it.
And they're usually, I call it, I don't know if this is a real phrase, but I've always called it supply chain saturation because it's like if you have, okay, you have water jet. You have surface grinding, you have us, then you have heat treat, then us again. So there's all these places where knives can be. And so for me, supply chain saturation is you don't have like gaps. So each one of those, it's like you have knives at heat treat pretty much all the time. You have knives ready for surface grinding pretty much all the time. You have steel coming for water jet pretty much all the time. And it's like if you're trying to try like trickle feed it. It becomes a real pain in the neck because the stack up of lead time starts to kick your butt because it's like steel comes in, water jet. Oh, they had a huge job. They usually turn it around in 3 days, but now it's 2 weeks. Oh, shoot. Now, like surface grinding, something happened. Now, oh, heat treat took 2 weeks instead of one. So it's like the more saturated it is, then the more of like shock absorption it has. And so instead of like having just a pile of steel doing nothing, I've always, when I do things like this, it's like I rush it into the supply chain so that supply chain is more robust. Not necessarily just have like steel on a shelf, but it might be something to consider though to have an.
For you, it probably matters less. I've always again, because of what I was producing, I was never confident enough to be like, I'm gonna make 200 of these exactly this way. Now I'm starting to think that way. Like I would be like with the Kihoku, I would be confident in making 200 because even if I knew that I was gonna make a change, I know that I would make those 200 that way. Right? Like, but it's a shift in how you interact with the planning component. Like my gut is still like, oh, I would rather have raw materials because raw materials are flexible. As soon as that's turned into a part, it's now that part. Right.
No, and I was thinking about it yesterday, like back with another metaphor here, but I kept thinking about it's almost like I would like our outfit to have a better suspension. It's like I'm a car guy,
Described. Okay, suspension. It's weird. I didn't go car. Okay. So, yeah, you want to be able to smooth out the bumps.
And
Okay.
that's supply chain saturation, but that's also like a reservoir of steel, like you were saying. And the other thing about it is, I know this is in the weeds a little bit on this metaphor, but stick with me. So in a car, depending on what you want it to do, it doesn't just matter that you have suspension, it matters where is the suspension. So on a Jeep, you have an axle and the suspension is above that. In a like a Subaru where you want to like rally and go fast, the differential and axles are moved up into the car and the suspension is below the differential. And the difference, they call it unsprung weight. So is the axle on the suspension, like the differential, or is it on the ground? And it's a pro and a con depending on what. And I was looking at our supply chain and where our suspension has been is water jet blanks have been the shock absorber.
Got
But
it.
that means that there are processes downstream that cannot absorb shock because they're unsprung weight, if that makes sense. So like if something happens to us where a surge in sales happens
Right.
or some shortage or some or scrap a bunch of parts or whatever, like to get the water jet blanks in to actively like meet this need for more knives takes like three supply chain steps. And so I was thinking about, I was like, where that suspension is not close enough to the finished part because I can't absorb shock if there's multiple stages between the impact and where the inventory is. So my mindset is I want to move when steel comes in, I want to move it to a heat treated knife. And that it doesn't need to be bevel ground per se. It just needs to be heat treated because that means it doesn't have to leave our shop again. So if we have a surge in orders or we want to do a big drop or a YouTube video comes out and a bunch of people show up at our website, we can spin up the X9 and start grinding and absorb the suspension, absorb the impact because it's like the spring in the system is at the very end of the process. Whereas if it's used to be, like I said, water jet blanks, which is like in the analogy is like if you want the thing to operate quickly, you need to limit unsprung weight. And so it's like almost exact metaphor. I don't know. It's kind
So
of in the
you just,
weeds.
yeah, but you need to figure out where you.
Where do you put the spring? And it's like, what do you want it?
What
Is
kind of
you,
long travel are you building? Dude,
you're
what are we
right.
talking about?
I know. I know. I knew that was going to get way out there, but like,
No, but it makes sense. I mean, that just in general, like where is the redundancy or where is the resiliency in any given system? And then does that align with your current needs and risks? I think is like, dude, if you just look, here's an easy way to do it, okay? Just put $5 million, okay, in a high yield savings account.
I'm gonna
Okay.
be set.
And then, dude, that will cover you if you have a machine go down, if steel's not available, like super simple process.
Well, and then the other option is like, do you just take the 5 million and go buy Crucible? You know what I mean? Because it's like,
Yeah, these are problems that are definitely related to financial necessity, right? I would like to get to a point where I have like a 3 to 6 month burn, like slush fund just for the business where, and it varies. Sometimes we get close, sometimes we're not close. But I think like that to me I think in a lot of ways, because of how diverse our business is right now, I look at financial resiliency as one of the most important, right? Because if something's not available or a machine goes down, if the funds are there, we don't really have a problem, right? And that's true of anything. Like you still have, if steel dries up, you still have a not having steel problem. But if you have 6 months of operating costs, you're in less of a situation. If you have 6 months of steel, you're in less of a situation, right? Obviously, like not all resources can be devoted, nor should they be, to like insulation, but a little bit of them should.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the balance. That's the whole lean conversation, is like you don't want stale inventory. Not that it's expirable, perishable stuff, but at the same time, you don't want cash tied up too much. And that's where I was thinking, like, where do you put the absorption? Because I guess a couple months ago I was thinking is like, I just need to saturate the supply chain and kind of make the whole thing a spring. But it's like, wait a minute, that's going to be overspending, because the point of impact is we need to be ready to grind any number of knives at any given time. That doesn't require saturation everywhere above that. It only requires just a big pile of heat treated knives. So it's like, that's kind of, it's like narrowing the focus of like, don't just make everything saturated. Think about where exactly is the best place
And
to.
that ties to efficiency too, right? And this is why, like, I didn't go to business school. There's a lot of things that I'm not looking at from a purely business standpoint or from a bottom line standpoint. Like, I'm sure a lot of people could like look at what I'm doing and be like, dude, this doesn't make sense financially. But there are decisions that I make that aren't financial motivation isn't the primary driver. Like, it's important, it has to work, but it's not the thing that is making it successful or a failure, in my opinion. So a great example of this is like right now with cup wheel grinding for you, you realize that being slightly inefficient allows you to not have to devote a bunch of time and resources and potential failure to improving that process by a nominal amount. Like, you're choosing an inefficiency as an efficiency. Okay. I think that carries over. Like, lean, I've always struggled with it. I don't think my brain works that way. I like with ADHD stuff, like we talk about ADHD tax, there's things that I have to do in certain ways that are inefficient. That's the tax. So I look at it, I'm like, well, yeah, you know what? I do have inventory on the shelves. But at the end of the year, when we do our mystery boxes, I recoup that. Like, and there's times where it's like, oh, something else failed. Like, oh, but we have this product on the shelf. We're gonna re-bring that out. Or just like there's usually a way to compensate for an oversight or something and turn it into a win, at least in my experience, at the scale of our business, right? So like if all you are focused on is like pure efficiency, I actually think there are risks in that too.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, there
Right?
is. Yeah. The just-in-time manufacturing, it's, people love it, but in some circles, it's a dirty word because,
Right.
I mean, we've all seen with the COVID thing, it's like how many companies just went straight onto the
Dude, I didn't
rocks.
even think about that.
Yeah.
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 Right. Like, and we actually, I can, that actually affected us. So, because in 2020, not only did we shut down our business and move cross country. Not shut down, but like we stopped working, right? We basically survived on the product that we had far longer than we thought we were going to need to because of delays on the end finishing the shop and the house. So I knew, like, I had had a plan of like, okay, I need to be able to have product for this amount of time. But some of those other products that we had just kind of had, or projects that were like midway through that got completed, those were the things that actually allowed us to kind of thrive and come out. Like, when I look at them, like, we came out pretty unscathed despite huge setbacks. Like, I maintain that every plan I set around the move failed in some meaningful way, whether it's like, the truck shows up and the shop's not done like whatever it was, financial goals not hit or so, dude, if we had been lean, I'm like, oh, we'll be, you know what, we'll be back in the shop in a week and I'll be back
Yeah.
up and running and the next product drops here. Dude, we would have lost 6 months.
Yeah, and by extension too, you had the where the absorption was you had an inventory of finished product.
Finished product.
So,
Right.
because if you had an inventory, if you had a supply chain that was saturated throughout, then you'd be driving across the country with a bunch of Cypops that need tumbled.
Dude,
You
yeah,
know what I
no
mean?
good.
So it's like you need the absorption to occur as close to the point of impact, which is basically as close to a finished product as you can get.
Yeah.
But that's where you get into the thing of like, you don't want it so close that you can't change the product. It's like you couldn't change the finish, you know? So it's like for you, I know you've done things where you'll have like a bunch of Cypops that are
Yeah.
machined, and there's
Yeah.
just literally just like one or two steps to get
Yeah.
them to go into like a tree of possibility.
Yep.
So it's like that's a pretty ideal spot right there where it's
Yeah.
like it's really close to the point of impact where it can take a surge,
Yep.
but you can quickly divert it into like these other
Yeah, it could become
diversifications.
like super custom going to a
Yeah.
show,
Yeah.
or it can become like a website drop of like a base product. You know, an interesting one that I heard. I would love for someone to be able to confirm this, but I had heard that Bill Moran, who like if you guys don't know Bill Moran, like look him up, super awesome. Like he's one of like the kind of the founding fathers, I think, of like the American like forged knife movement, right? I had heard that he had like a process where it was like one knife to sell, one knife set aside for a show, one knife set aside for retirement, or like it was something in there. And I all like as a custom maker, I always thought some version of that was pretty cool. Maybe the numbers change, maybe that's not true at all, but somebody like a good friend told me that. And I don't have any reason to not believe that there wasn't some truth in it. But even back then, like hand forging one knife at a time, if you had the mindset for like security, he realized, hey, there's a time where I probably can't do this.
Yeah, it's like he's it's like dollars aren't his currency, knives are. And he's
Yeah.
like it's like he's saving knives. Yeah, that's it.
Dude,
It's like a
any knife
very
maker is probably going to relate to that because like I still think about things in knives. I'm like, okay, that's 10 knives. Okay. Like, is it worth it?
No, I do too. That's funny.
Dude, one, I feel like we're probably a good time to wrap up, but I want to give one shout out since we talked about steel so much. So, Laren Thomas has written a couple books, but if you don't have any background in steel, the story, is it the history of knife steel or the story of steel?
The
The
history of knife
history
steel, I
of knife
think.
steel. Sorry for butchering the name. It is awesome. And basically what it is it's all the stories behind all the steels. So like we talked about Chris Reeve being part of, CPM. It's going to talk about that. It's going to talk about the early guys who were forging, who were experimenting with steels. He basically did all this historical research to try to track down like, hey, why was this steel created? Super, super cool. It's a good read. Highly recommend
I
checking
have
it
his other
out.
book. I haven't picked that one up yet. I'm a
That one is
must.
that one's like deep, right? That's like deep technical data. I have it also. I like
Yeah,
skim it.
knife engineering is what
Knife
the
engineering. Yeah. And it goes like pretty heavy into like technical stuff. But the history of knife steels, I really hope I'm getting that right, is it's just a good book. Like if you like knives, you're gonna like the
No,
book.
I'd really enjoy that for sure.
So yeah, you would definitely enjoy it. It goes in like it's got like all the like wartime stuff too, and it's like cool. Wire steel's around. Okay.
I need to get the PDF version so I can like do the auto search for the word World War II and then
Dude. I haven't
re
read the whole thing. But it's just dude, it's just I love this. I think that like library, obviously, like internet, great. Internet's great. He talks about it a little bit in the foreword. When he went to research these steels, he's like, I couldn't find anything on the internet. The stories were not there. So, like, sometimes you actually just have to go to the person who is interested or has knowledge of the thing. And, like, in his case, he took it all and compiled it into a book,
Which is
but it's
awesome.
because he was curious, right?
Yep.
But now you probably still can't find that information. So if you want it, go read the book because
Yeah.
it's awesome.
Now it's been more memorialized, which is a
Yeah.
great service.
Yeah.
Larin's,
He's such an
yeah.
asset to the industry.
Yes, he is.
Like
Yeah.
his whole family is just like integral. Like
Yeah, they are.
they're like knife, you know, you look at it and you're like, that's knife industry royalty.
It is. Yeah.
Right? Respect.
Yeah. Big respect. Thanks, Larin.
Thanks, Larry. Okay. All right. You want to wrap it?
Let's wrap it.
Dude. Okay. Thank you guys for listening. We've been super quiet in Patreon, but thank you guys for supporting us. Like it does help. We really appreciate you guys.
Yeah, thank
As
you all.
always, email us, let us know questions. See you out there.
Peace.